You're listening to Drinking on the Job, DOTJ. I'm your host, John Coyle. Drinking on the Job is a toast to the culture of food, wine, and all things fermented. We'll be talking with winemakers, musicians, artists, late-night bartenders, scoundrels, and more. It's time to grab a glass before its last call.
Stefan Karpinski is the brand ambassador for Mr. Black Cold Brew Liqueur. I am a monster fan of cold brew coffee, and what Mr. Black does to this brilliant liqueur is pure alchemy. Listen up, coffee geeks. This is your episode. Stefan Karpinski joins me today. He is the brand ambassador for Mr. Black Cold Brew Liqueur, coffee liqueur. I got to tell you, I can't wait to dive into this one because anyone who knows me knows I love cold brew coffee. So thank you for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great being on. So let's go into the beginning. Where are you from? How did you find your way into this cocktail culture?
Oh, man. Yeah. We could be on this podcast for 3 hours. Full story. Okay. I'm from San Francisco, California, originally. Family's Italian immigrants, first generation. My mother came out on a boat with her family and settled in the one area of San Francisco at the time where everybody was, in North Beach. So I had an upfront personal viewpoint from hospitality from my grandmother and how she approaches cooking in the household or how she did. And then just all of the historic Italian restaurants in the North Beach area, which I started working at as soon as I was
age. Yeah, it was a hotbed of Italian restaurants back
then. Yeah. I mean, the Staking Rose, you've got all these, you know, just iconic places. They're fewer and further between now, which is probably great because they don't evolve very well.
Right.
Getting started in the kitchen at 15 and a half, as soon as I could contribute to the family, was kind of how I got started.
So did you want to be a chef? Did you want to own some restaurants? What? Where's that?
I mean, I was a musician, so I wanted to be a performing musician, right? So, but I was in high school, so needed to help support the cause. I also wanted to buy some equipment and, I was going to have to do that myself with the situation at home. So I remember putting my first guitar on layaway and starting a job and taking a bus cross town to the Haight-Ashbury area of San Francisco where this great old music shop used to be prior to a fire.
What year is this roughly?
Oh, man, this was 96.
Okay.
Yeah. 96, yeah.
Still kind of the Haight. That's cool.
Yeah, it was still happening.
It was pre-tech, right?
It was, it was absolutely, everything was still happening. This was an old music store that had been around since, the heyday and beyond. So I remember everything was still handwritten. It was a reissue Fender Mustang or something.
Have it?
Oh, yeah, I still have it. And I have since acquired the original 69 Fender Mustang, that it was a copy of. So
you still play?
I still play. I play more than Martin these days, in a small apartment in New York. But that's kind of how I got into hospitality. And then I stayed with it because the schedule was great for musician, right?
If you had
gigs, I think I mentioned earlier that I was building out recording studios in my off time just to get enough sweat equity to be able to record our bands, in spaces.
What was the name of your band?
It was called The Breakdown. We were around for 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it was great.
Brightest moment for The Breakdown?
Oh, man. We opened for Modest Mouse.
Love Modest Mouse.
I know. It was a last minute, hey, somebody needs, somebody couldn't make it. Can you fill in kind of thing?
Right on.
Yeah. I mean, we're the first band, but it was great. It was great being there and, being backstage with the gangs. But we just trying to find odd ways to make ends meet and, the hospitality, whether it was in the kitchen and then eventually into the front of house and eventually into the bar when I turned 22.
And so you were bartending in California and San Francisco?
Yeah, I started in San Francisco in the Bay Area and then I moved down to San Diego when I was 25.
And did you have your own cocktail program? Because I was talking to our good friend, Reese, and she was saying that some of your cocktails are famous and still written about.
I mean, the great news, when you talk about The Breakdown, our old band, we weren't on, MySpace or whatever it was at the time. We were always selling CDs out of the back of our trunk. So it's very rare that you hear about that band these days because it's only in physical medium. But the great thing about, the internet these days is that these these stories and these cocktails live on well beyond bars that, you know, I was running at the time or, you know, was partner in are still around, right? Like I'd mentioned one off air, one of the bars and restaurants I ran all the F&B for is still around 40 years later. And then another bar that I was written up a lot in is no longer with us.
Well, right? What's the one that's 40 years later still around?
Oh, George's at the Cove. It's an institution in La Jolla, California.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
San Diego. And then the other, yeah, so I've been lucky enough that, you know, I've been written up numerous times about cocktails that I've done in the past. And that's really special. And when people will, you know,
that's
like refer
cool.
to them or whatever, yeah. like Milk Punch, like really early on in the clarified Milk Punch days in the, on the West Coast, I remember being written up. And that was really because I was really a fan of another gentleman's Milk Punch that was written up in the LA Times. And every time somebody would be like, hey, well, let me see what your recipe is. I'm like, well, mine's good, but if you want a start point, I really feel like this guy over here has already got one published, right?
And do you see any of your cocktails now in the New York cocktail scene?
Yeah, absolutely.
Certainly riffs of. We all take a riff off.
Especially right? these yeah. days with working for Mr. Black and coffee cocktails. Sure. And I've been on the brand for about 5 years. And, you know, 5 years ago, coffee liqueur category was so dead in the yeah. U.S. Coffee and cocktails were really kind of dead unless it was, you know, a really great Irish coffee down at the Dead Rabbit or if you're yeah. on the West Coast over That's at Buena Vista in San Francisco. But, yeah, I think, you know, because I got on the ground floor of coffee cocktails in the U.S. and got behind him so early working on Mr. Black that there's a lot of, you know, whether they're coffee Negroni riffs or more tropical coffee cocktails sure. or something like a Margarita Negra, which I came up with to kind of solve a problem for our brand, which was our sales would dip in the summer. Like people just wouldn't think of coffee totally. Cocktails yeah. in the middle of summer. And I was like, you can balance almost anything to a great if you have the skill to make a great margarita,
sure.
including coffee, and that roasty toastiness balances out.
I'll tell you, I was
and
just
adds
telling
such complexity to that cocktail.
Isabella, who's our recording engineer today, I was mm-hmm. telling her that like there comes a day, it's not pinned to a calendar, but like winter starts to get over spring, and I just start drinking cold brew or iced coffee,
yeah.
and that rolls right until like October. Then that day happens, it's hot coffee again.
Yeah.
So I would think in the summertime, like the cold brew would be a natural, you know,
and I think,
kind of.
Obviously, I think that has absolutely changed, mm-hmm. and we had a lot to do with changing it. But in the past, the idea of a coffee cocktail was very literal. Mm-hmm. Coffee was the only, you know, real discernible flavor in the cocktail, right? Whether it's a Irish coffee or even an espresso martini, those are very coffee forward cocktails. Whereas something like a Margarita Negra or a coffee Negroni or
coffee
any
Negroni,
of these,
I have to try,
which is so good.
I'd say so. I was with I think it was at Mel's.
Okay.
And I had an espresso martini, and sure. I never had one before. And I was with our Italian brand manager, Salvatore, and the bartender was being very kind and generous and said, hey, I'd like to buy you guys, gentlemen, yeah. espresso martini. And we both looked at each other like, oh, please. And
right.
we both had a couple sips. We were like, oh, my God, this is good.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think a lot of people rolled their eyes.
I just had this preconceived notion that it was kind of a sweet kind of thing, and it was absolutely spectacular.
I've been making that drink since the early 2000s, yeah. right?
And I
not well. Not yeah. well, mind you. Like back in the day, our idea of coffee here in the U.S. has changed so drastically.
Oh, my God.
Even yeah. in the time that I've been behind the bar, which has been over 20 right. years.
Yeah.
But in the last 50, 60, right, we went from Folgers Crystals being like the
sure.
play, right? It was cheap, commodity,
sure.
Soluble coffee. And then at some point, we started, you know, thinking about, you know, cafe culture when Starbucks started coming out. And
right.
funny story, I came off the train and I passed two Starbucks in three blocks to get to this studio.
They know
so
where the money's at.
They're yeah. alive and well here in Midtown.
Yeah.
But they brought that cafe culture from Europe. Mm. But they didn't bring quality coffee necessarily. They just brought that like style.
Yeah.
So it's only been the last 10, 15 years when like that third wave movement has really yeah. permeated around the U.S. And that's where we've seen wherever that is happening, where people are drinking great coffee that's well roasted and is more about the coffee than the rest of it.
Right.
That's where the espresso martini is doing really well because right. you get out what you put into it, right?
I was looking at the birth of it. It was like in the 80s in London. Some customer asked the bartender, I'm drawing a blank on his name. He said, you know, I want to be awake but drunk.
Yeah.
And he
That's a great PC way to put that too, yes, by the way, because yeah. there was a swear word in there.
Okay. Well, we could swear. But yeah. I just thought it was like, oh, that makes 80s been around. So that's been around for 40 plus years, right?
Think about how yeah. interesting that is that this yeah. cocktail that is so iconic
yeah.
and having such a great moment came out of the 1980s in London, of all places.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a cocktail drinking community at the right. time. They were beer, whiskey shots, and very like, you know, men drank, you know, pints and whiskey, and women drank gin and sherry, right? And they're a tea drinking nation. They don't drink coffee. Yeah. Like, how did this drink come out of that era, right? And I've been so lucky. I've spent so much time. His name was Dick Bradsel. Yeah. Okay. I've spent so much time with his daughter, who actually used to formerly live here.
How old is that guy now?
He passed a couple years before COVID.
He must be an old guy.
But I can't remember what his age was when he passed, but he was, you know.
I'm sure in the obit they mentioned the.
I'm sure, yeah. I mean, his daughter is, you know, in her 30s. So, okay. And she just wrote a great book, little plug for her,
sure.
Dick Bradsel,
yeah.
Called Dick Tales. And I highly recommend reading it, because this gentleman, not only did he create the espresso martini out of an era where coffee and cocktails weren't a thing in his environment, but he also has the Bramble and the Russian Spring Punch and more. Cocktails in the international database of cocktails, and even Sam Ross,
which is
insane when you think of it, right? Because I think like a lot of the modern classics, you know, Sam has a stamp on, right?
Yeah, it's interesting the way a confluence of happens, right? You have the cocktail culture takes off in the U.S., the coffee thing takes off, and then this. I mean, espresso martinis are so popular, restaurants have them on tap now. They don't even make them fresh anymore. Well, certainly do. But have them on tap says exactly where that brand is.
Sure. Right. Yeah. And I you know, I've had my hand in helping a few bars, because it's not an easy thing to do.
To batch that? I imagine not.
And to get it to froth correctly, right? Because, I mean, that beautiful frothy head is a lot of what makes the espresso martini so iconic and delicious. Is it kind of reminds you of like an espresso shakerado.
Yeah.
All that emulsified coffee protein really does add to the whole pleasurable experience and the look and the whole bit.
Sure.
And it can be kind of hard to replicate if you're just drawing it through a draft system.
I was at Il Buco a couple weeks ago. The bartender was there, and like 9 people walked in. Bar was kind of busy. It's one of my favorite places.
Yeah.
And the person said, I'll take an espresso martini. And everyone said, I'll take one. And the bartender, you could look in his eyes, and he's like, shit.
Yeah, I mean,
because they're not batched.
Yeah. Well, if we used to, you know, we used to always roll our eyes, right? But that was because the espresso martini in this country had not taken on, like, it's been the number one cocktail in Australia for over 10 years. It's the reason why Mr. Black exists, because it was kind of like this espresso martini in a bottle, and it was the drink of Australia.
Sure.
It's still number 3, number 4 in the UK, has been since Dick created it, pretty much. But in the US, it's been a recent thing, right? And that has a lot to do with your mise en place, right, as a bartender.
Sure.
If it's not getting ordered, you're not stocking everything, right?
Right.
But nowadays, it's ordered so much, you really should have it ready to go,
whether you're
pulling espresso ahead of time, you know, and having it bottled for service, or using a cold brew concentrate as a facsimile, which works really well if it's a high enough concentrate, or if it's a really volume bar, like batching the whole darn thing into a bottle and going from there. Like, and at that point, no bartender can really roll their eyes. It's one bottle touch.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's just easy money.
Actually,
it's like
this would
taking
be
your money.
Using Mr. Black.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because the coffee is already there.
Right.
You just need a little bit of fresh coffee.
Sure.
There's 10 times the coffee in Mr. Black than
Let's taste coffee Mr. Black coffee
Let's
liqueur, man. We got some in the glass.
Well, cheers, brother.
Cheers,
it's your first one, which I'm really always
I was excited. I told Stefan, please bring it, because I haven't had it yet. And
yeah, this one's yours, mate, for sure.
Oh, thank you. This is like, wow. I mean, it smells like great roasted coffee, first off.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's the most important thing.
Which, as a cold brew coffee drinker, you know, is actually very hard to do. That infusion process actually allows for a lot of time for those volatiles, you know, the aroma volatiles to dissipate off.
Right.
Because this was one of the hardest things we've ever done, is to actually get this smell into the bottle. And that has all to do with how we're handling our freshly roasted, freshly ground coffee.
You know, when you open the bag of beans,
right?
Like, the you know, Puerto Rico export company, the bags, you walk in, you're like, that's what it smells like.
And
which is like kudos. And it should smell like that, right?
Right. So that's the taste. That's the nose. Now we're finally getting it on the palate. What do you think?
You know, like I said, I'm a hardcore coffee drinker, and I can taste the coffee.
Mm-hmm.
I do like this little bit of bitterness, which I like in coffee.
You got to have it.
I love an espresso. It's there, but then there's kind of chocolate notes come in.
Yeah.
It's really kind of viscous on your palate, but there's still great acidity to it.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. I could
pour
this over ice.
Ice cream, ice.
Yeah.
Put it into anything you want. Equal parts this and your favorite whiskey or rum. couple dashes of bitters, a great
We are going to break it down, but I first need to know, like, how did you quickly get here? Who recruited you?
Sure.
And what does your day-to-day look like?
Oh, man. No, that changes every day. But about 5.5, 6 years ago, Tom Baker, one of our mm-hmm. founders, actually came into the States. We had already launched in New York, but we were starting to work on launching, you know, some of the rest of the big states mm-hmm. that were open play states, right? So we came to California, ended up at my bar after pitching to the distributor out there, and showed me Mr. Black, and I had it for the first time and was blown away.
Right.
Because I'm a huge coffee drinker. I used to work in coffee. It was 5 years of my past history that I didn't really touch, was barista in the second wave world. But yeah, I've always been disappointed at what we had available to us in the bar mm-hmm. as far as coffee products go, that I would have to make my own, which sure. was very inconsistent because you're at the whim of the roaster that you're working with, and 100%. They might have to change their blend, or they might have to, whatever it is, it changes. Whereas this was so delicious, and then to have it made in such a large enough quantity where it's a really consistent product, and it had way less sugar, about half of what we were used to.
Yeah.
So a lot of that viscosity on your palate that you just tasted is actually how much coffee is in it.
Right.
There's 10 times the coffee of an old world coffee liqueur, but only half the sugar, 19 bricks.
How much caffeine is in it?
It's about a third of a shot of espresso.
Oh, okay.
In equal volume, so not that much.
Right.
And we've been doing some things to lower the caffeine content. That way, just like having much lower sugar, it allows the bartender or the home bartender to add more if they want a thicker drink. Once again, you can play with your cocktail at home or at a bar to include more caffeine. If you are making an espresso martini, you add a shot of espresso, it's obviously going to bring that amount up drastically.
So this gentleman meets you, he tastes you on this.
And I was like, when can I get
He's got his eye on you now to begin with.
So I was really humbling. Around the same time I was getting milk punches on Tales of the Cocktails website, stuff like that. I was on a short list from the distributor because he had asked, hey, I'm in California. Can I get in front of a couple of, bartenders who have great palates, well-known, what have you, just to make sure it plays? It's coming from Australia. I'm sure everything he'd heard about us was that we don't drink good coffee.
Right.
He's like, I don't even know if this is going to work. It worked in New York, but that's New York is not a real place. We all know this.
True. Yes.
It's
the Magic Kingdom.
It's a wild
with
place.
With homeless people and rats.
But, yeah. Well, not as much as in California.
Okay, right.
But,
good point.
The rats, yes. But so he wanted to get it in front of a few people. Mm-hmm. And I was super humbled because that list was like a who's who. It was Kevin Dietrich from PCH. It was Eric Castro, who at the time owned Plight Provisions, and then somehow I end up on there, and throw Stefan on there. But I remember he came in on a Thursday and he was like, yeah, I want you to taste this mate, like really thick Aussie accent. And I'm like, okay, right. I'll give it a try. And when I had it, I was just blown away. And I remember being like, I need to be the first to have this. I want to get on menu immediately. It was something that we would do at my bar, is kind of be that lighthouse for new things we were really sure. excited about and kind of help people learn how to mix with it, what have you. And he's like, not yet, mate. Might take like a year, but I'll let you know. And we stayed in touch over that year. And when he finally called me and was like, all right, you can order it next month. I was like, my bar really needs more activations, more cool things going on. And I was the president of the Bartenders Guild chapter in San Diego at the time. So I was like, if you guys want to come out and do a masterclass and tell us why it tastes so darn good, and then roll that into like a launch party, we'd love to do it. So he got me connected with the New York-based, U.S. team. And the rest is kind of history because we did that. And I'd never seen a brand, do everything that they said they would do and, go above and beyond and, ask for a list of names of some of the best photographers in the area and then choosing my favorite and then not haggling over price, just paying them what they're worth. Like, all those things were above and beyond for me. So it just left a lasting impression. So when my bar actually closed and was turned into a steakhouse, classic story, sweat equity guy,
right,
almost vested, and they're like, hey, we're gonna go in a different direction, he actually approached me, was the first one to contact me outside of a core group of friends.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, hey mate, what's going on with that? I was like, I don't know. He's like, I love that bar. What? I was like, I don't want to get into it,
yeah,
it was
sure.
too fresh. But he was like, that's crazy, one of those things where timing just totally lines up. He was like, we just decided this week we need a national brand ambassador since we're going national. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm your guy for that, but I absolutely want to take that meeting. And we happened to both be texting on like airline Wi-Fi, and we were both headed towards New York anyway, so we ended up having a long chat the next day, and by the end of that chat, I think we all knew what direction, you know, we could go in and see where we could take this thing, right?
Yeah, so do you travel the country?
I do, yeah. Okay. I'm national for the brand. Yeah.
Wow, that's a big job.
Yeah, absolutely. But I get a lot of these awesome moments where I get to taste people on it for the first time and get people excited about putting these two things that are both just so interesting and incredible together, right? Like the coffee world is so vast,
right.
And coffee itself is this incredible, complex flavor profile, right?
Yeah, I love coffee. Being into the wine business for so long, mm-hmm. they run so parallel, coffee and wine,
totally.
And champagne, like the tastings, the flavors, the profile, the expressions, the aromatics, there's just so much similarity. And I think that's one of the reasons why coffee really kind of took off, because people started to like drinking wine, like, you know, yeah. The more you drink,
and
the more
you get
you
this
know.
Added benefit of waking you up every morning, right? Like
yeah.
70% of the country drinks coffee every day, and a lot of them just do it to wake up, right?
Right.
For the caffeine benefit, what have you. But many more of us, more and more every day, I feel like, are really
sure.
taking on to the ritual quality of it, the vast difference in flavor and being able to play, you know, in all these different, you know, arenas when it comes to what flavors you're putting on your palate.
Beans, but, roast,
yeah,
all that
there's
stuff.
Just so many variables, so, like all the way back to origin, right? Like
yeah.
a lot of us don't realize that coffee is a tropical fruit, right? And where
yeah,
it comes
true.
From.
Yeah.
I was just at the Brooklyn Botanical Garden, and they have a really beautiful full-length coffee tree in one of their atriums or one of their whatever those things are called, the big glass houses.
Right. Greenhouse,
and it's
yeah.
yeah, the big greenhouse. There you go. And I mean, it's not only flowered, but it's fruited. Like it's the fruit's there for people
yeah.
to look at and touch. Right. And I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, the variance of beans makes a huge difference. Roast.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like
terroir.
It's yeah. This coffee terroir, 100%. Blue Mountain. Like you name it. Like
right.
It's pretty incredible. I do want to break it down why this is so good, but we'll
sure.
do a couple of coffee facts. Italy is the one country on the planet that has the strongest coffee culture. They've been instrumental in really kind of getting it out there.
Mm-hmm.
Finland is the world's biggest consumer of coffee. That's kind of crazy to me. The world's best coffee cities, London is number one.
Melbourne.
Australia.
For sure.
Melbourne, yeah.
Yeah. That, yeah. Melbourne and Sydney in
yeah.
Australia. And then, I mean,
yeah,
you can't really... discredit the Kiwis too, because they've done
right.
a lot. The flat white, they'll tell you, was invented in New Zealand, not Australia,
right.
But had its heyday in Australia and is now like really permeated into London, especially,
right.
and is almost a sign of a good coffee shop versus a bad coffee shop if they have a flat white on a menu.
Huh.
But yeah, a couple other coffee facts there. Brazil is the biggest producer of coffee in the world. Australia, kind of the third generation of like really great partnerships with. Mm-hmm. Origin and with farms and co-ops and whatnot really started in Australia and New Zealand. And yeah, the 70% of Americans drink coffee every day. And it's become like love language,
sure.
you know, quality. Like the way you talk about coffee, the way I talk about coffee, it's I love it. I love this, you know, and that's
yeah,
something.
It's sustenance.
Yeah.
It's what keeps us going. We look forward to it.
And it's something that we've learned at Mr. Black. Like people will evangelize for us, you know?
Yeah. I could see it just tasting it, being, like I said, the coffee lover. It's just,
yeah.
I mean, I could smell when somebody's pulling a great espresso if they're 15 feet from me. It's just the sensory thing.
It's incredible.
And your olfactory is so strong, it brings you all these great stories when you smell something great. But
and it has a more aroma and flavor compounds than wine does, which is
oh, I didn't
wild.
Know that. Okay.
When you think of
yeah.
what master sommeliers have to do to
sure.
become like master, you know, communicators of understanding the flavor compounds and,
mm-hmm. right.
and being able to pick out where wine comes from. Q graders have to go through just as rigorous, if not more, to really be able to grade coffee at a
right.
high level.
So let's break it down.
Sure.
So the coffee and also cold brew. Interesting enough, I found it like cold brew originated in Japan in the 1600s.
Yeah,
in
super
Kyoto.
Old
I was
process.
Because like, I thought it was something kind of, you know, last 20 years, like, oh, wow, well, long time.
Like, but we do with a lot of things coffee related. Yeah. Us Americans take a real long, circuitous route to the... To finding new things in coffee. Yeah.
So let's break down why Mr. Black is so great.
Sure.
So first we're going to start with the coffee, and then we'll tell some stories about the coffee, the beans, roasting, and then let's get to the distillation. And we'll go first. So let's start with, like, so the beans are from Australia?
No, actually, I mean, Australia is in what we call the coffee belt.
Okay.
Half of it is, the northern half.
Mm-hmm.
The coffee belt is basically the area around the equator that we consider the tropical belt.
Right.
But good great coffee from that region, that area of the world, must be at pretty high elevation, mm-hmm. too, for great Arabica to grow and grow well and be, you know.
And that is your bean of choice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Okay. There's a couple of other types. The two main species are Robusta and Arabica. Robusta is, you very rarely see them on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, they're considered to be much less quality. And they also contain a lot more caffeine, but they can grow pretty much anywhere. Like, we could grow them in our backyard here in New York. But Arabica tends to be a much better fruit, way better for cup quality, lower amount of bitterness, more expansive flavor profile. Not to say that there aren't some incredible, absolutely incredible Robusta coffees out there, but they're a little bit fewer and further between. Some of our friends in a Vietnamese coffee company, Win Coffee Supply, they use 100% really high-grade Robusta, but that's an exception.
Right, because it's also when people say, man, if you really need to put some lead in the pencil, you get some Vietnamese coffee.
Totally.
And that stuff is rocket fuel.
And some of the best Robusta coffees are coming out of Vietnam. But yeah, so mostly if you do have Robusta, they're in like Italian blends, French blends, like stuff. It's a way to lengthen, right, and cheapen the end-all batch, right? Like, but generally, Arabica is a better quality. We use 100% specialty grade, which means 80 points or higher. If you don't score 80 points, it's not like in Wine Spectator where you just don't put it on the bottle or in marketing material and you still sell it for whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
It all goes into a heap, which is called commodity grade coffee. It's sold at one price, like gold, like anything else is commodity.
Mm-hmm.
And it changes on the stock market, basically. So super high quality is like 1%. Of the best coffee in the world is the kind of stuff we use in Mr. Black. And we're currently finding our coffee right now from some of the best regions in the world, from Colombia and Ethiopia, Ethiopia being the birthplace of coffee.
And is the roast always the same? And is that some kind of like coveted secret for
you
guys?
It's not a secret, no. I mean, it changes every year. And we've blended coffees, and people blend coffees all the time, right? Because if you think about the whiskey world, you have one barrel of whiskey. It's going to be very one note. It can be very tropical. It can be very, you know, caramely, whatever. The reason why a Bullet or a Maker's Mark will dump thousands of barrels into a batch is to have a very consistent, rounded house flavor, right?
Sure.
And that's basically what coffee shops are doing when they do coffee blends for, you know, purpose, whether it's, you know, espresso or cold brew or batch, whatever
It's consistency. People want their version of Coca-Cola.
They want... Right. I mean, Starbucks has been a master at this. Every single cup of coffee that comes out of those, you know, thousands and millions of stores have a very similar house flavor.
Right.
It's one that I'm not a huge fan of because it's a little more bitter than I like it.
It's a little higher in acid. I think that it's kind of like they use it to cover flaws.
But they taste the same as they have when they were like only found at Borders or whatever, like Barnes & Noble or whatever it was back in the day.
Yeah.
So that is... something to be commended, I guess, the consistency, right? But that people blend coffees all the time in the same way that people blend whiskey to have a well-rounded flavor, which is what we're trying to achieve, right?
So you then grind, roast.
So we roast first.
Okay, roast first.
Bring everything to the central coast of Australia. We have a brand new Probot P60, which is a 60-kilo roaster, air roaster from Germany. We just upgraded from a 13.5-kilo roaster, MF, which was running like 20 hours a day to roast all the coffee we need for Mr. Black. And we roast them separately. So the Ethiopian, the natural Ethiopian, that's really bright and vibrant. The real reason why you get that like fruit forward kind of tropically citrusy notes in Mr. Black. That's we kind of call it the special sauce that kind of gives you that like tingly finish, like sparkly finish.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's about, you know, a third of the coffee in Mr. Black. And the other two thirds are coming from in and around Papillon in Colombia. And that's being sourced through a third generation group of farmers who are also helping their area, the area around them, and finding people who are most vulnerable and teaching them how to produce better quality fruit, to command a higher dollar trade, but also to use less water, you know, and all sure. the things that you need to do to be sustainable, you know, long term. And that's really commendable. It's a group called CoffeeNet, and their coffee is super spectacular and very Colombian, right? You know, that dark chocolate and, you know, rich flavor profile. Right. And we're roasting that separately from the Ethiopian to a bit of a darker roast to kind of enhance some of the dark chocolatey, you know, goodness, sure. But still pretty light, a lot lighter than what Starbucks would do, right. I would say. And we're blending those coffees together mm-hmm. and then grinding. And we have a really beautiful process of grinding our coffee to really coarse grind, which you do for cold brew, and try to trap as much of the aroma through that process. It's something that we've been working really hard towards. And then that sits, you know, cold brew is an infusion.
Right.
It sits for a bit, and then we press as much of the coffee out of the grounds as possible, right? Because that's a lot of great
sure. How many days? What's the timeline for actually making the cold brew?
Used to be, like, when I started with the company, from start to finish, like when we start roasting beans, it would take 2.5 days to make a batch mm-hmm. in like bottle, what have you. And like we've now been able to whittle that down to an 8-10 hour shift, which wow, is insane. Like from start to finish, from like roasted beans to liquids going out on a truck to our bottling facility down the street.
Says a lot about the demand as well.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, when I started, we were in like 7 states. We were in a few areas in Asia, we were in Australia, and we were in the UK, and now we're in 50 states all over Asia, all over Australia, and wow. most of mainland Europe, too. So the demand is much higher than it was back then. And we used to make Mr. Black in our master distiller's garage, which was basically what was true, and outside of the garage, like wow. on an overhang, in a beautiful botanical garden. And now we make Mr. Black in a facility that is designed to make this one thing.
Right.
Which we had to do. We couldn't keep doing that.
And then distillation, you're adding vodka?
We're adding vodka. Okay. It's a Australian winter wheat. You know, it comes to us, you know, when we start the process at 96.5%. So it's really, you know, high proof. And we proof it down with our cold brew. It's a really concentrated cold brew. It's why it's so dark. The bottle is so dark.
It's beautiful.
And there's no added color. There's nothing. It's just coffee water, vodka and sugar. That's it.
Right.
So we're adding our cold brew to the vodka, proofing it down, and then adding a touch of sugar.
It's like 50 proof?
It's 50 proof, 25%. And then we use nitrogen through the whole process because there's two main factors that will stall coffee, you know, make it taste stale. And that's, you know, oxygen and light. Hmm. And luckily everything is in a steel and whatever, so sure. there's no light, but oxygen can really play havoc on it. So we use nitrogen through the whole process. We blast every bottle with nitrogen so that first sip is always perfect. You don't have to, you know, at the proof, cold brew, the reason why we cold brew, besides the fact it's a buzzword, really is that you're able to concentrate the amount of coffee suspended, right, in water to a much higher concentration, but you're also getting a lot less bitterness and acidity.
Right.
And that really works for us. Because it allows you to play as a bartender or a home bartender with anything, whether anything behind a bar, anything found in a kitchen, you can really use it with anything, right?
I was going to say, that's one of the reasons why if people drink cold brew, most people know you get a little more caffeine, but there's also much more complexity of flavor.
Totally, yeah. And it tastes more really like apparent what fresh roasted, freshly ground coffee smells right. like, yeah. you know?
Give me a couple of your favorite cocktails that you like.
Just
or you think it's like the perfect, yeah, or the perfect... The perfect, using Mr. Black.
Sure. Obviously, espresso martini is a great way to, you know, enjoy Mr. Black. It's having a great moment. It has its moments in our weekly, you know, the way we go through life. Whether it's, you know, transition between work and play, when you're meeting with your friends before you sit down for dinner, it's a great time. Brunches, what have you. Great wind down moment at home with a loved one. So that's a great one, and it's right. very coffee forward, and it kind of gets you a nice little jolt. A coffee Negroni, I think, is one of the coolest ways. And there's plenty of ways to play around with the original Negroni spec to include the coffee in Mr. Black.
Do you have a couple favorite cocktail bars that you like?
Oh, man, I have a ton.
Without insulting any of your friends?
Man, it's too hard.
For New York?
For New York. Okay, so I'm still going to insult everybody, which is not fair.
Okay, but rather than say favorite, let's say the last three places you've had a cocktail.
The last three places I went. I went to Coat last night with a couple colleagues. Yeah, great spot.
Yeah, it's a cool place.
Wonderful green barbecue, too.
Yeah.
Their new spot, Kokodak, is great,
too.
Oh,
God, I got to go there. Yeah,
highly recommend.
Hottest restaurant in the city.
Right? I mean, a desert island bar for me would definitely be the Dead Rabbit. You can't not include them, especially because they find a way to consistently be incredible in hospitality and the way that it feels warm and welcoming.
100%. I had them on the podcast, and,
and
then
the
I went down and had a couple of Guinness and Irish coffee with them. So,
oh, yeah.
Good
they're
crew.
The best, right?
Yeah.
And then you got Mr. Paradise and Super Bueno and
Super
Romeo's
great,
and all these great bars in East Village.
Wow.
S&G or Sip and Guzzle just opened up on the west side. That's a great, great spot already being very successful.
Oh, cool.
There's a ton, man.
Yeah.
I can't.
I know. And New York.
New York, it's like the, you know, we drink differently here. It's probably because of the way, you know, this town works and where everybody lives to where we work. And also, there's really no living room, so everybody's living room is actually the bar.
That's why restaurants are so crowded. Everyone, you can have a $3 million apartment when your kitchen is, you know, 20 square feet.
Yeah, where every other market is closing down restaurants and bars, we're opening a one that could be considered best, you know, in class every week. It's crazy.
Yeah, New York is this fountain. It just does not stop kind of just creating energy and opening restaurants, bars.
Right.
So it's what we do. So we're at the part of the show where I say, hey, man, you know, God came to you in a dream and he said, you know, I've had espresso martinis. I want to thank you for like spreading the gospel and being part of Mr. Black. So I'm going to give you a gift. It will be, you'll know, your last day on the planet.
Yeah.
So you'll get a chance to eat what you want, drink what you want, and listen to a piece of music as you float off. So the eating, drinking, and listening to.
Yeah. So eating is my nonna's gnocchi with bolognese.
Oof. Okay.
For sure. Like that's...
Okay.
If I could go back and have that one more time, I would.
Okay.
Drinking would be a Negroni. That's the only cocktail I have on my body. I have a tattoo.
Oh, you have a tattoo?
from Meg from Love and Victory. It's actually her... her drawing, but
that's very cool.
Little shout out to a homie, but definitely Negroni. That's a desert island cocktail for me.
Right on.
And then what was the last one?
Listening. What are you listening to?
Hank Williams. I'm going out. Listen to the best.
Hank Williams. Get a song.
Oh, man, one song.
Name
from
one.
Hank Williams.
Yeah.
Oh man. What would it be? It'd be something silly though. Like it would be like what's the one where he's like down by the bayou? What's that one called?
I think I know. Birmingham Jail or something.
I mean, there's so many good ones.
Okay, we'll pick a good one.
Yeah.
But hey, I want to thank you for being on Drinking on the Job podcast.
Cheers.
It's kind of crazy. You had Guinness on last week. Have you on this week, Mr. Black. And I have Empirical coming up. So
if you're listening to them all three in tandem, those are some of my favorite people. So you're in really good company.
That's true. Yeah.
If you're basically like hanging out with the three of
Zach,
us.
Zach, Georgie, and Stefan.
That's right.
Anyway, thanks. So people listen to past episodes. You can catch up. And again, I want to thank Mr. Black and Stefan for coming on the podcast. And for your people want to follow you, where are they going?
On Instagram, Mr. Black is Mr. Black Spirits.
Okay.
And then I'm at SJBERTO, SJ Berto.
Great.
And that's like, if you want to get a snapshot of everything I do for the brand and then in real life, that is a great, great follow. Great follow.
Cool. Right on. Cool. Thanks for being on.
Cheers. Thanks for having me.
All right. I'm going to drink the rest of this.
Let's go. Cheers.
Thanks again for listening. Don't forget to check us out at dotjpodcast.com. Until then, I'll see you at the bar.